Welcome to the Tales of Success podcast, a show about Labradors and achieving training success. Hello and welcome back to the Tales of Success podcast. It's me, Vicky Sharp, again, and today I'm joined by Carla. Carla is the human or staff member to a lovely black Labrador called Roscoe. And during our chat today, we're going to talk about some of the harsh realities of having a Labrador in your life. Carla's going to give us a great insight into what life has been like for her and Roscoe. And you'll also hear about adolescence. You'll hear about training and also some great insight into taking a road trip around Scotland with a teenage Labrador. Carla, hello and a big warm welcome to you. And thanks for joining us on this podcast and also sharing a bit of insight and your story. But before we hear too much about you, let's start off with the main man. I'm going to get you to give us a little rundown of Roscoe. Tell us things like how old he is and a little about his character.
Hi, Vicky. It's great to join you. Yeah, Roscoe is definitely my master half the time. He rules the roost now. He's lovely. He's just turned two, actually, this week. And he's a very typical black lab young man with a very, very waggy tail. And he's about 29 kilos. He's rather muscular as Labradors go. So he's not one of these tall, you know, leggy labs. He's more shorter and stockier, great lots of muscles, and the most gorgeous amber eyes, which literally melt my heart every time I look into them.
There is nothing better than having a Labrador just stare at you. It's kind of melts your heart every time it happens.
He gets away with a lot.
Yeah, and so he should. I mean, Roscoe is a lovely character. I've trained with him a little bit from when he was a puppy and then also when he was a bit older. He's very happy when he's with you. We can see that. But physical locations, where is he at his happiest? Is he a bit of a water dog? Does he like the countryside? Does he like hikes with you? Where's he at?
Oh, I mean, he loves all sorts of things. He is happiest, though, when we're out on a new adventure. When we're exploring, he loves the woods, all the smells. He goes crazy for those, loves using his nose. He loves also a good game of fetch and loves jumping in rivers, playing with his buddies and doing massive zoomy runs and big dashes across open beaches if we ever get the chance to find them. So, he loves all that. And also, he just loves sitting by my side, watching the world go by. He's a great companion. He is always up for a bit of a road trip and adventure, going to different places, and loves new smells and keeping a nice variety in our walks.
And Roscoe is very much a companion dog. He's a pet rather than a working dog. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yes. He's my buddy. He's my best friend. We are hoping to start some gun dog training soon, but at the moment, no, he's very much a pet, and that's the way he'll be.
Excellent. And tell us a little bit about your history with dogs. So is Roscoe your first dog, or have you got previous history with Labradors or any other dog for that matter?
I came into owning Roscoe literally with no experience of dog ownership. No one in my family had a dog. I grew up with cats, pretty much every pet other than a dog when I grew up. So this was a brand new experience for me. It's one that I've wanted for quite a while, though. I've had my eye on getting a dog, and I waited for years, for a good decade, for the time to be right for bringing one into my life. And I think, you know, I'm not alone when I say this, the pandemic was a good gear change for a lot of people. It gave us a chance to change direction, and I took it as well. And in 2020, we got Roscoe, and yeah, never looked back.
Tell us a little bit about what prompted you to actually get Roscoe. So you kind of had this step change, you knew that it was the right time to get a dog, but did you always think, I'm going to go out and get a black Labrador? Or did you think, I just want a dog, and then Roscoe just happened to pop along at the right time?
I've always loved dogs, but I've had an eye on Labradors for quite a while, and black Labradors particularly. I mean, about 10 years ago, as I said, I was in a very different place in my life. I was working in television, traveling all around the world, very, very busy, very stressful, very fun, but never really around. So it wasn't possible to get a pet or a dog or anything like that. So I was out in Afghanistan, working out there for a little while, doing some reporting. And I came across all the working dogs. They kept me sane. I was out there for sort of 3 months at a time doing some work there. And I met all the dogs that were working with the British forces, including the Labradors. There were a few Labradors that were doing stuff there. And they kept me sane. And I fell in love with this lovely black lab called Bella. And we used to go and visit her at least every week or every chance I got, and built up this bond. And I was like, I really want one. I really, really want one. And I went back home. I'm very happy to come back. But I've sort of always in the back of my mind going, one day, this is what I want. And then finally, during the pandemic, I took a bit of a chance to move on to something a little bit calmer, a little bit more stable, slightly different gear change in my career. And then I thought, this is the time. I'm going to make it happen. If I don't do it now, it's never going to happen. So changed my life, used it to make life work for me now and bring the dog that I've always wanted into my life. And here's Roscoe.
Perfect timing. And you said it was kind of pandemic timing. So a lot of people got dogs during pandemic. How was the experience of finding a breeder, finding the right dog? Because actually there was a lot of people doing it at that sort of time. What process did you follow?
Well, it feels like you've jumped on a cliche. You don't necessarily want to jump on this bandwagon. I didn't want the fact that everybody was going after a dog. It didn't help things for me. But I think you use that chance, that break in life, and go reassessing a few priorities. And so it really was just the timing gave me the space to make that change in my main life and my career to make it possible. And searching for a dog during the pandemic was a nightmare. I mean, breeds, you know, you look at good breeders, you're trying to find the right breeder, you can't visit them in the same way. And, you know, a lot of people were asking stupid money, a lot of, you know, high deposits. Some you could see were scams. They were wanting you to put deposits down and money down without even seeing the dog. The litter wasn't even born yet. There was some ridiculous situations, and I just sort of initially put some feelers out to some reputable breeders, missed out on the shortlist for a couple of them just by sheer demand. And then I just sort of sat back after 6 months, sort of keeping an eye on it. I just sat back and went, you know, it will happen when it happens. And then through a friend of a friend, someone put me in touch with a really good breeder, and you know, they were breeding their family pet, but they were all sort of registered. They had the right paperwork. It was studied with a local, you know, a local working dog that they'd mated before with. And basically they were looking after people through, ideally through word of mouth, that they could get to know, build the bond, come and see the pups early on. And it just all worked out really well for me, because I met, you know, this breeder who wasn't after silly money for their dogs, wanted to find the right home, wanted to do it properly. And it just all fell into place. And I thought, this is a sign, you know, it's finally happening. And I was lucky I got to meet Roscoe very, very early on. I think he was about 3 weeks old when I first went to meet him, and had that lovely moment of picking, had the pick of all the black labs from the litter. And yeah, he was one of five brothers. And I sat down amongst them all, and yeah, he chose me.
I've recently picked from a litter of nine puppies, and it's awful. It is absolutely awful, because you've got all of these cute, lovely puppies, and you think, how can I pick just one? It's a very difficult decision to make. But you said that Roscoe picked you, and I think often that happens. It's just kind of meant to be. So you've picked Roscoe out of this litter, and he's due to come home to you. So tell us about where he lives. So is he enjoying life on a country estate, or is he in the middle of a city? Where does he live?
So he's pretty much a city pup, but I'm on the edge of London to Kent. So we've got fields, country parks, and open spaces very, very near us, but we are in a quite a busy part of sort of the southeast of England. So yeah, he's had a lot to deal with as a puppy, but he's come into this and taken it in his stride from the get-go. This is where he's come to. And I make sure we get out and about in the countryside as much as possible. For me, as much as anything, I think we're both, you know, country at heart, and I am looking to move further afield in the future. But yeah, he lives on the edge of London and has to deal with quite a lot as a result.
Yeah, but they're very, very adaptable dogs. And particularly if he's been there from the very start, you know, they do kind of adapt to these situations quite nicely. You said earlier that you're over in Afghanistan, you were doing some, or you were spending time with working dogs, and you'd seen how incredible they are. So I guess you had a picture of what Roscoe would be like, and you had this beautiful vision of, you know, life with Roscoe. How is it different? Is it all it stacked up to be? Is it what you thought it was going to be? Or do we have some real differences?
Broadly, taking it, the short answer is it's everything I wanted and more. But I'm not going to paint the picture that it's all been rosy. I think when you first get a puppy, you know, no matter how much you prepare, it does hit you. It's shocking. If you haven't been doing it all the time and regularly, you're suddenly like, what have I done? What have I brought in? And there are moments where you think, goodness, was this really a good idea? And you know it was. They look at you and you're building that bond and it's brilliant. But there are times when it's just exhausting. Disturbed sleep, needing to suddenly take on effectively like a child. You need to put their needs first and you're constantly at their schedule, keeping track of, well, when did they last go to the toilet? When did they last eat? Are they, doing things right? And puppy-proofing your life and realizing that even no matter how much prep you've done, there's always something they'll find that you didn't want them to get, or a pair of shoes will get, chewed or something. So the puppy stage was tough. It was a bit of a sort of eye-opener. I was prepared for a lot of it, but it still is tiring work. And I think everyone needs to sort of take a deep breath. And I got scratched so much and bitten. And as he was learning his bite inhibition, I took photos of my arm and it was just shredded and raw. And I just remember thinking, goodness, my hands kept bleeding and chafing because it was sort of cold weather at the same time. And he was nibbling me. And now he has the most gentle bite and mouthing. It's brilliant. But at the time, learning that bite inhibition wasn't easy.
And, that bite inhibition and the nipping and the chewing, it can feel relentless. And often I speak to people that train with us at puppy school and they're almost in tears because they've brought this cute, fluffy little thing into their life to love them and care for them. And sometimes it just feels like you're getting it wrong because a puppy's being a puppy, but actually it's part of the rough that we have to take with the smooth of owning a puppy. It happens to us all. But I think you've just given us a little bit of hope actually there that it gets better. So this puppy stage, how long would you say you struggled for before you started feeling like you were making a bit of progress? Because it's not often a quick thing.
It's so funny because it does go so fast, but the time it feels like it's going on forever. Yeah. You think, when am I going to see the improvements? And I remember it was around the 17-week mark when the biting lessened. He's a quick learner, luckily. Roscoe's cottoned on quite quickly to ease off on that. It didn't stop completely at all. I mean, they still have their moments. They still get overexcited, overstimulated, and the bad behaviors can come out, especially if they haven't had enough sleep. And keeping that sleep routine was really, really paramount. But things started to get quite a lot better by 4 or 5 months. Training really picked up. I was working with you a lot then. And then, the puppy stage feels nothing because then you hit adolescence and that's just a whole different ball game. So
I think it's kind of bittersweet because you get out of the puppy stage and you finally think you're having a bit of a party. You're like, yes, I've cracked it. I've done really well. But adolescence is a real thing. And you have these moments where you think all of this hard work I put in the puppy stages was pointless because I've now got a dog that's rebelling and, fueled by hormones. And adolescence is tough. So talk us through what adolescence meant to you and Roscoe and when it started to show itself.
Oh, goodness. Those many, many days where his recall was doing pretty good and you'd think, oh, I've cracked this. And then one of Roscoe's favorite things is to play with other dogs. He's a sociable dog. And the hardest thing has been trying to stop him running up across a field to another dog that he thinks is having a better time than him or he wants to go and say hello to. We had to do a lot of work on the long line just to sort of get that sorted and to teach him to be with me was the best place to be. It still, even at 2, remains our challenge. I still have to make sure he's clocking and listening to me when he sees another dog sometimes, because I can tell his instinct would be to go over and say hello. And so that's when I always check in now and make sure like he's listening and engaged and we're working well. That's our weak spot. And an adolescence, so many times I thought we had it. He was listening to me well, and then he'd suddenly dart off and let me down, and I'd just be really embarrassed, apologising and getting cross with him, cross with myself. He'd sometimes just stop listening to me, forgot his name at some points, and just do what suited Roscoe really. And I'd swear at him sometimes. I'd have moments where I felt like I was an absolute idiot, losing the plot. Everything we'd worked so hard on was just falling apart, and it just felt I felt like I failed really. It was a bit disheartening. It was sometimes enraging, a bit silly, and sometimes you just think, oh. And then I've had to have sit down and talk to myself, because if you have a little moment where your temper goes a little bit and you're not feeling happy or something's gone wrong, it's so easy to get really hard on yourself to then you curse yourself every time you've said something. I curse myself every time I've sworn at him or said something wrong, because it's natural to want to be frustrated and to let that out. But then you feel so guilty afterwards because he's not doing it to spite me. He's doing it, literally, because he can't help it. His brain's full of all these different chemicals and different things going on. But remembering that he's not doing it deliberately, he can't help it. It's just part of growing up. You have to keep telling yourself that.
So, and I, whenever I speak to people about adolescence, I have to remind them that they were a teenager once. And I think for most of us, when we were a teenager, we probably had a little phase where we started rebelling against our parents a little bit. We started being a bit cheeky to the teacher at school. We started doing things and just pushed boundaries a little bit. It's very similar for dogs. They will all go through some sort of phase. And the approach that we take is not going to stop it overnight, because hormones are a huge part to play here. But did you find that being really consistent with Roscoe during that stage was helpful for him?
It's helpful for him. I felt like the biggest thing for me to keep my, should we say, impatience, frustrations at bay, and to make sure our bond worked well, was to really look for the positives, everything he was doing right, and really make a big deal about praising those things and keep him engaged in that, wanting that praise, wanting to work with me. So even if it was just a case of, you know, checking in, you know, coming back, looking up me to his name, anything that I wanted him to do, even if it's right down to basics, I would spend some time really praising him for the little stuff in the hope that the big stuff would follow. So yes, consistency is important, but sometimes, you know, consistency can go out the window when you're up against it, you're feeling a bit pressured or stressed, or things are going a bit wrong. You're doing your best. I did try my best to keep it consistent, but the best thing for me was just looking at the small stuff. Every little win was a win, and take it and work with it.
Yeah, I think celebrating the little wins every single day is really important, whatever age your dog is, because you'll always naturally focus on the stuff that annoyed you most, because that has the biggest impact on your life. But at the end of each day or each week, just think, what did my dog do that was incredible? Because there is so much that we just dismiss because we come quite familiar with it. It's quite normal to us. And celebrating that for your own sanity is very important. How old is Roscoe now? He's coming up to 2, isn't he?
He's just turned 2 this week, actually.
Okay. So that adolescent period that he went through and is probably still going through, a lot of people during that adolescent phase, when they've got boy dogs, think, right, we need to go to the vet and get the dangly bits removed because that's going to solve all of the problems. That's sometimes what is thought. And I think as we've found out a little bit more over the years about this, actually, a lot of vets are not willing to do it as early on as they maybe once were, because it used to be something that got done very early on. Is Roscoe still intact or entire? Does he still have all of his dangly bits?
He does indeed, yep. He's holding on to them for a little bit longer. For us, it was a mixture of things that went on. During adolescence, unlike sort of, not every dog goes through this, but he went through a fear period. They can get another fear period in adolescence, which the vet sort of informed me was normal, doesn't happen to all. But it was suddenly, like around the 15 month mark, he suddenly became like a puppy again, barking at, say, a bin bag or, you know, something that he hadn't, you know, some people, all the things that maybe when he was a puppy, you'd be a bit wary of initially, that he got over and for months hasn't batted an eyelid at. Suddenly, for about 3-4 weeks, he became, oh, I'm not sure about that now. And it was really hard to predict and didn't see it coming at all. We're walking around like, what's freaked you out? What is this? And it was stuff that's like, but you've walked past that same thing for months. So that was a difficult stage. I really tried not to sort of obviously push him too much at that time, play it safe, take it calmly, let him do things at his pace. But it was a little bit of a, oh, okay, I've got a slightly more nervy boy than some perhaps. I mean, this is a dog who has never humped another dog, never shown any boisterous sort of behaviors. He's relatively calm as Labradors go, but I have noticed sort of he went through what I joke is his emo phase. He became a little bit adolescent, unsure of things and a bit, oh, I don't know. And it sort of stemmed a few things, and he became a bit wary of the vet. We had a bad experience with a locum vet, not our regular one, and you know, that was a bit of a knockback. This was all, again, during the pandemic when I couldn't go in with him. So I don't even know what happened. But for ages, I've had to rebuild and back up to that. So when we got to see our vet to talk about neutering and to generally have a health check and things, which wasn't easy. I had to spend months going every week to our vet to build him back up to going back in again, I may add. When we saw our vet, he was like, you know what, your boy's been a bit nervy. He's had a bit of a setback. I want you to keep his testosterone a bit longer. Give him a chance to get through that, mature a bit more, maybe he might need it. You know, maybe he never will need to be neutered, but maybe he will, but just give it more time, see where we are in another year. So we had that conversation around the 16 month mark to work out whether I needed to about 18 months or so on. And he just said, no, sit on it, wait till at least he turns two, see where we are and take it from there. So that's where we are. We've made it to two. We're still intact. He's causing me absolutely no issues in that department. And I'm just going to sort of see how I go in the next year or so. I think with some male dogs, it's you know, sometimes it's a matter of when, not if, but I don't know. Every dog is different. And I think there's a lot of social pressure to do it. I mean, our vet sent around an automated email when he was really young, too young for a Labrador really to get neutered, saying, have you thought about it? There's a lot of social expectation that you will. And I can see a lot of reasons why it would be beneficial. But for us, I think if I did it too soon, he might become absolute bag of nerves if you didn't have that testosterone confidence.
There are repercussions though. Yeah, you know, years ago, I mentioned this earlier, it just was like the thing to do. Your dog turned 8 months old, the vet would give you a call and go, right, now's the time to get them neutered because we don't want unnecessary litters of pups. And that was kind of the only reasoning why people did it, and they didn't want their dog to be too boisterous. But we know with kind of bone development, muscle development, whole body development, that testosterone is really essential for a lot of dogs, and also confidence. You've mentioned about that secondary fear phase. I know he had an issue with another dog where there was a bit of a dog attack. So actually it can really knock their confidence if we suddenly take those hormones away from them. You've said actually there's no issues with other dogs. You know, he's not humping other dogs. He's not overly boisterous. So we don't need to really consider it. It's not something that is totally essential. So did you always plan to have it done or plan not to have it done? Or are you just playing it by ear and just seeing how Roscoe copes?
I guess I thought I would. And then when I got Roscoe and I sort of went, I'll just see how it goes. I'm not against or for it fully. I think it's just about assessing for Roscoe what's right for him. I think, you know, I'm saying that I don't have any behavior issues from Roscoe, but there are still other dogs that have issues with him being intact. They take a sniff, and some, you know, some male dogs just all have a little grizzle. That's happened a lot less. I'll say, talking about adolescence, one of the hardest things with an adolescent male, particularly from around the 9 month mark, is that huge hormone surge they get. And, you know, Roscoe got some bad greetings from dogs from about 9 months. You know, they take one whiff of him and grizzle or react very, very strongly. Now at 2 years, we don't get nearly as strong a reaction. We do get reactions from some, but not many. And I, you know, the 9 month mark seems quite a difficult age, I think, hormonally for dogs. And that's when Roscoe had a bad encounter with one dog that we'd met before. It was also in an intact male, Great Dane actually. And we'd met the dog before. I think that dog had previously been attacked, and long story short, we were hanging out together. We'd been in the same environment for quite a few minutes, sort of 10 minutes or so. The dogs had greeted each other absolutely fine. And then that dog lay down and Roscoe took a little sniff and he felt vulnerable being on the floor and just snapped at Roscoe. So, you know, but that was one attack which didn't help Roscoe's confidence at that time. And we were having a few bad greetings from some other males. So I was all for it. And then, you know, Roscoe's been pretty good in terms of him not doing anything to others, but we've had dogs try to hump him. He's had a little bit of a taste for the ladies. He's never done anything to a female dog, I may add, but he does like the smell. And I do have to keep an eye on that. And living in a city, you're meeting dogs all the time. So it's quite difficult. And that's probably the reason why I will eventually get it done, is simply for the fact that there will always be a dog in season somewhere.
Yeah, so definitely.
It might have to happen.
And actually, you can have the best trained boy dog in the world, actually, if they get that scent of a female that's in heat, it can be really tough for them to kind of listen to you, because again, hormones will take over. You said about those meetings with other boy dogs can sometimes be a little bit tense. How do you manage that? Do you have to kind of constantly preempt what might happen? Do you always have him on a lead, or do you give him free time to kind of explore himself?
So if we're off lead, strolling along, and I see another dog, I don't immediately react and panic. I think dogs do pick up off your body language. I mean, you sort of read the signals, you see whether that dog looks amenable or not, and you try and keep meetings, light, friendly, move them on quickly. Don't let them linger. If you're in any doubt at all, you can read the body language. You start picking up on that, and learning your dog's body language around this situation was really, really important for me. Knowing when Roscoe looked a bit tense, a bit unsure, a bit like, oh, I'd like this to be over now, thanks. And I'd really go off him. If he was happy and yeah, the dog seemed to be happy as well and the situation looked good, we let it go and let them greet. If it didn't feel right, and if Roscoe looked like I just wanted it to end, move it on quickly. If we're on a lead, or we meet another dog on a lead, I don't let Roscoe sort of obviously go up there. I don't like doing on-lead meets and sniffs with dogs, particularly male dogs, because if they don't like each other, which you don't know until you get close, they can't really always approach each other and give each other the full body language. They can't always give each other the right signals, and you can't always read the other dog's signals. Sometimes the lead can be a bit of a tether and a restraint, and they can get frustrated, feel vulnerable, be more likely to sort of snap at each other. So I don't do that. If I'm not sure about whether your dog's going to be friendly around an intact male, we just don't do it. It's not worth it, because it can set your dog back quite a lot if they have a bad experience. I've learned a lot of, you know, recently about sort of the trigger stacking process of how a bad experience, something quite stressful, can build up. And if you have that, maybe something else, or because we're in a city, an alarm goes off or something, that it can raise him above threshold, and then he's a bit of a bag of nerves for the rest of the day and needs a bit of calm down. So yeah, managing those situations, those greetings with dogs is important. It has got a lot better though. I talk about sort of the 18-month mark, his personality and everything seemed to really settle down around that mark, around that age. And he's become so much more mature, so much more calmer. I've really noticed a huge difference, which is another reason why I'm really glad I've let him get to that stage, mature and get past it all, really. So everything's a lot better now. But around the 9 to 18-month mark, that was a challenge.
So now you've got this calmer, more mature dog. You decided to take a holiday with Roscoe, didn't you? So is that something that you ever thought would happen? Or did you think, finally, we've got to this 18-month mark, he's calmer, more mature, now we can go on a road trip? Tell us about that road trip.
Yeah, we were very, very lucky. We went over and did the North Coast 500 around the whole of north of Scotland, which was amazing. Something I've had on the calendar, hoping to do for quite a while. By nature, before I got Roscoe, I was always into doing quite a lot of travel. So even though we were in the pandemic, I've always tried to take him on little adventures here and there, even if it's short and sweet, wherever we could go within the rules at the time. So I've tried to get him used to the car from an early day, and we've done quite a few trips down to Devon and various places. But the North Coast 500 was one of our big things to tick off. It was a long journey. We had over 21 days on the road. We stayed in 12 different places in that time. So it was a proper road trip, me and the boy, you know, driving around, and it was just great. But it did take quite a lot of prep. And I think anybody preparing for a big trip with their Labrador, there's a few things they need to really, you know, you factor in. Your car space for yourself is zero. I'd say about 3/4 at least of my car was stuff for him. Because if you're staying in cottages or you know, we stayed in hotels at some points and B&Bs and things. We had a whole range of different places we stayed. So you've got to take everything. You've got to take the throws just in case they jump on the sofa, because not everybody likes that. You've got to take all the bedding, the food, plan ahead. How much kibble am I packing in the back of the car? All that sort of things. And then the cool jacket or the wet weather, you know, drying jacket and the this and the that. And so it's quite a lot. And tick tools, if you're going up to Scotland, a tick remover is absolutely vital. So yeah, there was a lot of stuff to pack. But we set off in May, and we went all the way up, traveling up through Yorkshire for a night, then up to Edinburgh and then Inverness, and then all the way up to John O'Groats, all across the whole of the North Coast, which was just sublime. Had whole beaches to ourselves and nobody else on them, and he was just having a blast. And then to Skye, and then we went back through Glencoe and all the way down to the Lake District and back home again. So yeah,
I mean, it sounds incredible. I'm listening to you, I think I want to go and book the North Coast 500 now. Was it an easy trip to do with the dog as far as places to stay, places to eat? Did you find it a dog-friendly route?
Yes, it is. I think a bit of planning involved. It is a popular route, so you do need to get your accommodation, you know, sorted early. And like with anywhere, not everywhere takes a dog, so you do need to book that. If you're traveling with a dog, book your accommodation early, because the good stuff, the stuff that allows dogs gets booked up quickly. So yeah, a lot of planning for that, making sure you couldn't just sort of rock up and hope for the best. I'm sure some people do if you've got your own camper van, but I definitely don't. So yeah, a lot of planning involved. But apart from that, when you get going, it's really, really dog friendly. There were always restaurants and pubs and cafes that would welcome Roscoe. You know, there were a lot of places to eat and see, and most things would let dogs, you know, sort of sites and attractions, if there were, you know, where there were some, were dog friendly. You could take dogs along on a lead. And the best thing was there were so many beaches where you didn't have to be, you had to be under control, which, you know, Roscoe's now good on his recall. So we could really let him off, let him do those big runs on the beach and just relax. And there were woodlands and things to explore. So yeah, with a bit of planning, the North Coast, but the route was really sort of, I should say, effortless. We were spoilt for choice of walks. Some of the other places you do, it pays to sort of do a bit of research. Where do people that live there take their dogs for a walk? Where's good to go? Especially when you're stopping off, say, you know, on route, on the road, where's a good country park that's not far from the motorway? I can just pull over and to give them a really good walk, because we clocked up some miles. And I think the hardest bit is of getting right across country, that big sort of 4 to 6 hour schlek where you do need a stop ideally, and you want to make it a good one because they're going to be back in the car again. So doing that research, looking for that walk, planning them into the travel, making sure you've got all the bowls and the food and things you need for that day to hand, so you're not rooting around the back of the boot for the bag and with all the food in and things like that. So
did you find that Roscoe was just happy sleeping in the car as you were doing the driving, or did you have to find creative ways just to keep the boy entertained?
No, he's been well versed in the car travel since a young age. I made sure, I tried to do a lot of that when he was young, and actually most of the time he sleeps. He gets a bit fidgety. You can tell when he's had a bit enough of the car, because he sort of moves around a little bit and resettles. But actually he's really good. So he's a great travel companion, sits down. And what's lovely is he's attuned to the sat nav now. So when it starts speaking after a long period of, say, being on the motorway, and he hears something telling me to turn off or turn right, he sort of half wakes up going, are we there yet? And when he hears an indicator as I'm, say, pulling off a big road, he's like, oh, the indicator, that means we're getting somewhere. And he'll always just check, lift up his head, just see where we are, if we're going at what speed we're going at, if we're about to pull over. And you can tell he knows when we're about to pull over for a walk or for a break. It's like, oh, we're nearly there yet.
Bless him. What would you say Roscoe's favourite location, event or setting was on that North Coast 500 trip? Was it beaches or something different?
Yeah, for us, it was definitely the beaches. You know, even the beautiful South Coast beaches, the ones in Norfolk we've been to, all the ones around the, you know, the rest of England, nothing compared to some of those big, you know, open beaches where there's nobody on there. Some of the weather was very, very windy when we went up there. It wasn't all without sort of struggle, and it did rain. I mean, it was May. I had a beanie hat on and a big down jacket at one point. So it wasn't all sort of nice sunny beaches, but when you did get the space, it's that freedom, it's that sense, and he really loved that freedom.
Yeah, and it's a nice place to test that recall as well. You said that his recall had got to be pretty good, and that comes through training. It's not just a fluke, it's not just luck. So let's talk about training. Is training Roscoe really important, not just to you, but do you think it's important to Roscoe as well?
Yes, absolutely. He loves training. He loves that attention, that real, that challenge. He likes earning the treats, frankly. I mean, you bring out the sausages like, oh, this is going to be a good evening. I know what's going on. He loves the attentiveness and that bond that we get from doing training. And I think for me, I mean, I've always tried to keep doing something, partly because life's busy. If I don't, you know, sign up to courses and push myself and him, it's quite easy to get out of the habit. I mean, you know, we try and do a little bit every day, but realistic, we're all juggling very busy lives. So by keeping training going and doing different things, it keeps us basically working together. And his behavior improves the more training we do, even if I'm not, you know, training that specific thing, just that attention to each other really helps him in the way he behaves, because he's like, oh, I've got to keep listening because good things happen.
Yeah,
and it keeps him on his toes. We've tried to do quite a lot, even since our first puppy stage.
Yeah, it would be useful for people listening that have either just got a new puppy or are thinking about getting one in the future, just have a bit of a benchmark so they can realize actually how much training people do with their dogs and that it's not just a fluke. So give us a rundown of kind of all of the stuff that you've done with Roscoe or the things that you plan to do as well, because I know you've got some stuff coming up in the future, just so people can get an idea of what they could look at.
Yeah, there's so many things you can do. I mean, we did the initial puppy class with yourself, which was fantastic, gave us a good grounding. And I then did some in-person classes, which sort of carried on almost sort of puppy improvers sort of thing when we were allowed to do so during the pandemic. And then recently we've signed up for the Kennel Club Good Citizen Scheme, just passed our bronze award. We're starting our silver next week, which is great. There's some good challenges there. You know, we're doing a bit of that. We also did a scent detection class with you, which was great fun because Roscoe, as I said, loves his smells and sniffs in the woods. So we did scent detection and we still use that. During the heat wave we had this summer, there were days we couldn't go out in the middle of the day. We had, you know, hours to kill, sometimes waiting for that evening walk. So being able to walk around at home and do the sniff and finding the scent all around the, you know, around the house really, really helped him and kept his brain ticking over. And yes, as I mentioned at the very beginning, we're hoping to start gun dog training soon. I've been meaning to do that for a long while. Finding the right trainer for that has been hard because I'm not in the countryside. So finding the right one that doesn't use sort of really aversive tech, you know, training tools and things. I don't need him to be an expert at it. I just want to do it for fun, to really tap into his absolute joy of retrieve and carrying things. This dog will carry anything.
Yeah, and I think it is really important, whether you've got a working line Labrador or a show line Labrador, lots of them will want the feeling of purpose and they want a job to do. And things like scent detection and gun dog training for fun, even if you don't need them to go and pick up pheasants, actually, it just keeps the brain busy, gives you something to focus on. And I'd just like you just to touch upon that point. You said it was difficult to find the right trainer for those gun dog skills. What would you say your challenges were with finding the right trainer to help you with that gun dog stuff?
First of all, there's not many local. I'm having to go quite far, over an hour to get to this trainer. Then it's finding one that has the right class, one ideally that has the right ethos, ideally positive training, that's reward-based. Maybe one that's not going to, you know, use any aversive techniques at all to try and get what they want. That's quite important for me. So I've had to do quite a lot of research. It's finding ones that have been recommended. I kind of wanted to find one through a friend of a friend, really. They're the best ones. So when you go through a list and you're sort of searching for them on the internet, there's so many out there, and I've messaged quite a few and then the end picked one that has been recommended by yourself and a few other people. So looking forward to working with that trainer. But finding the right trainer for any type of course can be a minefield. And there is so much conflicting advice out there. It can be a bit overwhelming at the beginning. I've lost count of the number of people who have told me, you know, how to teach loose lead walking in different ways and different methods, whether I should be using a collar or a slip lead or a halter or a harness. And everybody is saying different things. And it is really confusing as a first time dog owner to go out there with this and trying to work out what's best for Roscoe, what's best for us. And so many people, and I don't blame anybody in this, we all want a quicker fix to stuff. We all want to find those solutions. And it's hard in the busy modern world to kind of bear with it and keep working through stuff. So I think finding the right trainer who breaks that down and actually shows you effective tools, but also reminding yourself you're not the best answers, the best solutions are not necessarily going to be the quickest. And you've got to just take it slowly and work through.
And you know, on that point, people tend to think, right, I've got a problem with my dog, so loose lead walking. And the first thing we as human beings do is we go online and we type in, how do I stop my dog pulling on a lead? Straight away, you're going to get 10 different people telling you 10 different things. And I would say, whatever the challenge with your dog, have caution, because your dog is very different to the next dog, very different to the dog that's going to come along in 10 minutes. So different approaches are required for every single situation, really. So that generic advice can sometimes be really tough. It's not always appropriate for your situation. So don't look for quick fixes. And you've really signed up to that ethos. You think, what is the longer term approach? Have you found it difficult to cut through that trash that is out there sometimes with the quick fix solutions?
I'm much more clued up now than I was at the beginning. At the beginning, you sort of, you know, you get your lovely puppy and you think it's a bit easier to do certain things. And then you realize, actually, I could do with a bit of support here. And that's where you try and find the right trainer. And I just had some that did so many different methods and it got both of us confused. Looking back on it now, I'd say for anyone starting off or just having a puppy is line your trainer up early and do the research, ideally before the puppy even arrives. So you can know who you want to deal with and have those conversations. It can be a little bit tough though. And I'd say that was one of the hardest things. Now I'm a lot more wary of those quick fixes. I'm also a bit more certain in myself of what I want and the way I want Roscoe to train. For me, it's about the bond. I want to keep that bond really good and him to trust me for everything. The current thing we're working on at the moment is, you know, handling and desensitization to that, because I don't know whether it's because he's a working line or what, or it's just Roscoe, but he's fidgety pup. He doesn't always like being handled lots. And I know in the long run, we need to be much better in the vets. We're leaps and bounds better than we were, but we've still got to improve that. And I want to get to the stage where he will consent to a lot more checks and things, because he's going to one day be an old pup and he's going to need a bit more of that. So he needs to be comfortable with caregivers and things like that. So that is a really long fix. I will probably be working on that for a good year, if not more.
Yeah. And also, part of owning a Labrador of any age is acceptance. We've got to accept that our dog is not 100% perfect. And that's mine included. You know, I have days where I think, brilliant, they're awesome. I have days where I think, what on earth am I doing? Things are going wrong. No dog out there is 100% perfect at everything. We just have to accept that and say, how can we work with them to get the best possible results for them and for you? And I think if you are fortunate enough to have another dog in the future, you will probably do things slightly different because you learn more as you go along. So for the people that haven't got a dog yet, what would your kind of one bit of key advice be to them?
Oh, it's hard to narrow it down to one. I'd say just do your research and prepare first. You know, first check that the breed is right for you and you are going in eyes open over how much time and, you know, energy it will take up at the beginning. I mean, my life has changed so much since getting Roscoe for the better, but at times it is utterly exhausting, especially as I'm raising him alone and I don't have someone else to share the walks and those early morning starts. And we walk for 3 hours a day in some form. Roscoe is unique in that he doesn't like to go poop in the garden, so he has to go on a walk for that. And it's just the nuances of having a dog. So research, prepared for how much time, and really set aside that time to make sure your pup settles in. That's something, my number one bit of advice. But I think it's like, get that bond going from the get-go, make it positive, look for the, you know, the small wins, as I said, look for the small wins, make sure that, you know, you keep things going in the right direction and have a lot of patience with yourself and the dog.
I think that's been really useful to have an insight into what it's really been like for you from puppy, adolescence, onto holidays, all these kind of good things. And let's just finish this. Would you have changed anything if you had your time again? Would you still have Roscoe? Would you still be living this life you're currently doing? Or would you have thought, actually, let's get another cat?
No, absolutely. I would stick exactly with the way things are. I would love to be living in the countryside a little bit more for my own benefit, but there's time for that. At the moment, getting Roscoe, it was the right time. The pandemic had its challenges, but it gave me a hell of a lot of time to invest in Roscoe. And that first year, we spent so much time together working on things. The downside was things like the vets and lots of shops and things weren't open. There was a lot of work and catch up we had to do when we were allowed to. But I think, you know, I wouldn't change a thing for the way things have worked out. And I'm really actually pleased that we've had that start together and our bond's just getting better and better all the time. So he's a lovely boy.
Awesome. And where can people find out a bit more about Roscoe? Because I know he's got his own Instagram account, as every Labrador out there should have. Tell us how they can follow his journey, see about some of that trip you did to Scotland and find out a little bit more.
Well, there's lots of photos, the odd reel too, on Instagram. So you can follow Roscoe's Labrador Life. We're just getting into TikTok as well.
Perfect.
Similar name, but yeah, a bit slower on the videos there, but we're working on it.
So listeners, go check Roscoe out on that Instagram and TikTok page. Hopefully you found that useful. Carla, thank you so, so much for sharing that information and insight with us. And I will catch you all on the next episode. Thanks for joining us. We hope that has been useful to you. But from me, all I want to finish off by saying is be caring, be consistent, and be your Labrador's best teacher. I'll catch you on the next episode.